That's master percussionist and conguero Mongo Santamaria with his iconic jazz standard Afro Blue, which has been interpreted by so many jazz artists. It's a wonderful, wonderful, iconic song. Tune. This is Lead Stories. I'm Utrice Lead. How about that? Utrice Lead and Lead Stories. It is Thursday, February the 28th, and first let's clear away a couple of updates that you may want to have. President Obama is calling for a meeting this evening at the White House with congressional leaders with the hope of breaking the impasse, this logjam, over sequestration. The president says that the Republican leadership ought to show up with solutions in mind. The Republicans said they've had solutions all along. It's not their fault that the president has changed the terms of previous discussions. The Republicans want entitlement reform, and the president and the Democrats want much more elastic in raising taxes. The Republicans said that very thing is a belated addition to conditions they had previously discussed. Baby Doc Duvalier shows up in court today in Port-au-Prince, Haiti, for the purpose of hearing whether he would be charged with human rights abuses during his brutal regime from 1971 to 1986. It's the first time he's shown up because they had requested his presence in court three different times. So it was something that he showed up. However, he asked for the hearing to be conducted in private because, according to his lawyers, he is frail and feeling unwell. You may recall Baby Doc was just 19 when he inherited the title of President for Life from his father, François Papa Doc Duvalier, who ruled Haiti with an iron fist since 1957 until his son took over. But like his father, Baby Doc relied on a brutal militia known as Toto Makut in order to keep the country under control. But he was forced in 1986 from power by a popular uprising and U.S. diplomatic pressure, and then went into exile, where he lived quite palatially, pardon the pun, in France. Pope Benedict XVI is no longer pope. He has sailed off. Actually, he didn't sail off. He flew off by helicopter into the sunset. He is now just a plain old priest who will devote the rest of his life in monastic seclusion. He was the 266th leader of the church, which numbers 1.2 billion Catholics. The Army private charged with the biggest leak of classified material in U.S. history offered guilty pleas in 10 of 22 counts against him, and a military judge said she would allow the soldier to read a statement explaining his actions. Bradley Manning would plead guilty to sending hundreds of thousands of classified documents to the anti-secrecy website WikiLeaks in violation of military regulations, but not in violation of federal espionage laws. The judge, Colonel Denise Lind, must decide whether to accept the guilty pleas, which could carry a sentence of 20 years in prison. Prosecutors still could pursue a court-martial on the remaining charges, including aiding the enemy, which carries a potential life sentence. Law enforcement agents today confirmed that the body found near the Mississippi River in the town of Clarksdale was that of mayoral candidate Marco McMillian, who went missing Tuesday. McMillian was one of the first viable openly LGBT candidates in Mississippi, said the Victory Fund, a national organization that supports gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender candidates. McMillian's spokesman said McMillian's sexual orientation never was an issue in this campaign. Authorities have arrested a person of interest, but did not identify who it is, and they confirmed that the charges have not yet been filed. McMillian's SUV was involved in an accident, but he was not in it at the time. The person of interest was driving the vehicle and had a passenger alongside when police responded to the scene of the accident, and that was what prompted the search for McMillian. And now, it's pop quiz time! Yay! Are you ready? Are you ready for a pop quiz? It's about time. I haven't done a pop quiz in a long, 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 long time. Way overdue. So you have already been given the consideration of mercy. Now, what is this pop quiz about? This pop quiz is meant to test your skills in many areas. Your advanced listening ability, your keen analytical skills, your knowledge of U.S. history, particularly of the modern civil rights era and contemporary politics, your innate skills as a journalist, because I believe we all have them, and your ability to present your point of view masterfully, which is the way we do business around here. Isn't that right? You may need something to write on or to write with, so you can prepare to do that while I tell you a bit more of this pop quiz. Yesterday was a very significant day. And for those of you who have grasped the teaching right here at this in this program, there are several layers of meaning to what we see and what we hear. So keep that in mind. That's a hint. And another hint I will give you is, I will call it symbols, S-Y-M-B-O-L-S, and symbols, C-Y-M-B-A-L-S. You'll figure that out as we go. But our test is predicated on an audio clip, which I will play for you now. It is something we will discuss after you have heard it, but you will be able to figure out what it is. So all of that is to say, I expect 100% accuracy in your answers today, or else I will find out who you are, and I will come to your house and just berate you. How's that? No, I wouldn't. I wouldn't do a thing like that. All right, let's start our pop quiz. Thank you.
Mr. Speaker, Leader Reid, Leader McConnell, Leader Pelosi, Assistant Leader Clyburn, to the friends and family of Rosa Parks, to the distinguished guests who are gathered here today. This morning, we celebrate a seamstress, slight in stature, but mighty in courage. She defied the odds, and she defied injustice. She lived a life of activism, but also a life of dignity and grace. And in a single moment, with the simplest of gestures, she helped change America and change the world. Rosa Parks held no elected office. She possessed no fortune, lived her life far from the formal seats of power. And yet today she takes her rightful place among those who've shaped this nation's course. I thank all those persons, in particular, the members of the Congressional Black Caucus, both past and present, for making this moment possible. childhood friend once said about Ms. Parks, "Nobody ever bossed Rosa around and got away with it." And that's what an Alabama driver learned on December 1st, 1955. 12 years earlier, he had kicked Mrs. Parks off his bus simply because she entered through the front door when the back door was too crowded. He grabbed her sleeve and he pushed her off the bus. It made her mad enough, she would recall, that she avoided riding his bus for a while. And when they met again that winter evening in 1955, Rosa Parks would not be pushed. When the driver got up from his seat to insist that she give up hers, she would not be pushed. When he threatened to have her arrested, she simply replied, "You may do that." And he did. A few days later, Rosa Parks challenged her arrest. A little-known pastor, new to town and only 26 years old, stood with her, a man named Martin Luther King Jr. So did thousands of Montgomery, Alabama commuters. They began a boycott. Teachers, laborers, clergy, and domestics, through rain and cold and sweltering heat, day after day, week after week, month after month, walking miles if they had to, arranging carpools where they could, not thinking about the blisters on their feet, the weariness after a full day of work, walking for respect, walking for freedom, driven by a solemn determination to affirm their God-given dignity. 385 days after Rosa Parks refused to give up her seat, the boycott ended. Black men and women and children reboarded the buses of Montgomery, newly desegregated, and sat in whatever seat happened to be open. And with that victory, the entire edifice of segregation, like the ancient walls of Jericho, began to slowly come tumbling down. It's been often remarked that Rosa Parks' activism didn't begin on that bus. Long before she made headlines, she had stood up for freedom, stood up for equality, fighting for voting rights, rallying against discrimination in the criminal justice system, serving in the local chapter of the NAACP. Her quiet leadership would continue long after she became an icon of the civil rights movement, working with Congressman Conyers to find homes for the homeless, preparing disadvantaged youth for a path to success, striving each day to right some wrong somewhere in this world. And yet, our minds fasten on that single moment on the bus. Ms. Parks, alone in that seat, clutching her purse, staring out a window, waiting to be arrested. That moment tells us something about how change happens or doesn't happen. The choices we make or don't make. "For now we see through a glass darkly," Scripture says. And it's true. Whether out of inertia or selfishness, whether out of fear or a simple lack of moral imagination, We so often spend our lives as if in a fog, accepting injustice, rationalizing inequity, tolerating the intolerable. Like the bus driver, but also like the passengers on the bus. We see the way things are. Children hungry in a land of plenty. Entire neighborhoods ravaged by violence. Families hobbled by job loss or illness. And we make excuses for inaction. And we say to ourselves, that's not my responsibility. There's nothing I can do. Rosa Parks tells us there's always something we can do. She tells us that we all have responsibilities to ourselves and to one another. She reminds us that this is how change happens. Not mainly through the exploits of the famous and the powerful, but through the countless acts of often anonymous courage and kindness and fellow feeling and responsibility that continually, stubbornly expand our conception of justice, our conception of what is possible. Rosa Parks' singular act of disobedience launched a movement. The tired feet of those who walked the dusty roads of Montgomery helped a nation see that to which it had once been blind. It is because of these men and women that I stand here today. It is because of them that our children grow up in a land more free and more fair, a land truer to its founding creed. And that is why this statue belongs in this hall, to remind us, no matter how humble or lofty our positions, just what it is that leadership requires, just what it is that citizenship requires. Rosa Parks would have turned 100 years old this month. We do well by placing a statue of her here. But we can do no greater honor to her memory than to carry forward the power of her principle and a courage born of conviction. May God bless the memory of Rosa Parks, and may God bless these United States of America.
All right. That was President Obama. Of course, you heard the voice. And it was on the occasion of the installation of a life-sized statue of Rosa Parks in the Capitol building, in what is known as Statuary Hall. It's a place of great reverence and respect, and a statue of Rosa Parks was installed yesterday. So now comes your quiz question, 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. You have to be brave. I'm really not going to be hard on you at all. It's just to see whether you're paying attention. Yeah, you're going to believe that? Then you'll believe that the Republicans and Democrats are sincere. Okay, great. 888-874-4888. Let's see who will be our first contestant today on Pop Quiz. The question is, what word was never uttered? What word was never uttered? In a discussion on civil rights and Rosa Parks and the great folks of Montgomery, Alabama. What word was never uttered? Let's see who gets that. You may want to tackle another question, so I'm going to give you an example. Describe the symbolic connection and symbolic difference between Barack Obama and Rosa Parks. Describe the symbolic connection and the symbolic difference between Barack Obama and Ms. Parks. Any takers? Well, what we will do, maybe we should do this because we don't want to get interrupted. While you think, let's take this break. We'll come back, and the answers will be flowing from you at that time, I'm sure. This is Utrice Lead, and you're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. We have Luther from California. Luther, welcome.
Yes, hi, Utrice.
How are you today?
You did not mention that she was a black woman. And
Wait. Just back up a little bit and speak slowly, because
okay,
I can tell this is going to be important.
Yes.
Go ahead.
He did not mention that Rosa Parks was a black woman.
No kidding.
He did
you
not.
Think, no kidding.
Had one not known Rosa Parks' history, they would have known that she was a black woman.
She's a black woman.
Yes.
A black woman. And where else did he not mention race, which was supposed to be so obvious? There was another piece in the speech that he made where he deftly avoided any discussion of race, which was what? Do you remember?
That I don't remember, no.
He said, "It is because of these men and women that I stand here today." I mean, come on. Is it going to kill you to say, because of these black folks I'm here today?
I totally agree. But he didn't say that.
Luther, I think I love you because
you
got it.
I love you too, babe. I always listen to you.
You got it. You got it. Bye-bye. That was now. Tell me about what you interpret that to mean. What is the interpretation you give that?
That I don't know.
Why do you think that he never mentioned that she was a black woman?
Because he tried to keep things at a neutral, a non-color base, I guess, where you wouldn't identify one from the other. But I think at their time that you're going to have to do that, because if you don't say that a person is black, automatically one would think that she would be non-black. She would be she wouldn't be black if you don't mention it at times.
Well, I'm thinking the very reason for them being there was because she was a black woman. It's the first black woman installed in the National Gallery.
Totally agree.
It's the first, so the very reason that he's there, in the sense that he's the first black president, she's the first black woman to have a full statue installed in the hall. So one would think that he would be happy to draw to himself, draw that at least in common. She is a world-renowned woman, highly respected woman. Even years after her death, she is thought of so highly, and she's such a dear person, a fond person in our memory. And yeah. He absolutely avoids saying, you know,
wow.
This is a black woman.
Yes.
Just, you know, isn't that interesting?
Yes, very so.
And, you know, when you jump ahead of that and you extend that discussion, you see that when in this country the essential struggle, a huge part of the struggle, involves the black community, and it was the black community that he elected him. He says only, it is because of these men and women. These were not just men and women. These were black folks.
Oh, well, he never surprised me.
Well, thank you very much, Luther, for that. Thanks so much for your participation today. Thank you. Now, you see that? That is strong. That's a strong observation right there. It would not have hurt the president one tiny little bit to simply say, I am proud. I am proud to be part of this. This is a noble black woman, a phenomenal black woman, who in her own way set this example, a standard that we all should emulate. Is it going to kill you, Mr. President, to say that, really? All right, so Luther got that question right. We still have the other question in play. We have a lot of questions. I want to see what others I could raise. What was happening? What makes this symbolic? Is what was happening literally across the street? Can you make that connection? Well, those of you who are following the news and following this program, you ought to have that answer immediately. What was happening almost across the street that makes this event even more symbolic? Come along. Let's hear from you. 888-874-4888. So far, Luther is the champion. He is the man. He is the one. He got it. He nailed it. Fantastic. So you still have two things to choose from. What was happening across the street that makes this event extremely symbolic, and which the president never mentioned as well. He never mentioned it. And we still have the other one in play. What was the symbolic connection between the president and Rosa Parks? You see, you have to listen for several layers of meaning. You get it. You just decipher it and you see how, therefore, beyond the actual thing itself, which is just one-dimensional, you get it or you don't get it. But it is painfully apparent. Now, if you're able to move beyond that, you see another layer of meaning, and then it takes on even greater significance. Why would a president continue to avoid this issue of self-reference? Why does he not discuss it? Even in a situation where the very reason for being there, the very reason for being there is that this is a black woman. The very reason for this event. Here is the first black woman, which is even more history-making, right? What is the problem in self-referencing? And what does that say about the view of this community? They quote the nameless, faceless men and women that he says who are responsible for him being there. Who is our next candidate? 888-874-4888. I was imagining we would have a whole bunch of people fighting to get online. But I think you're a little, you know, you might be a little reluctant. I don't know. Paul from West Virginia, yes. Thank you. Hello, Paul.
Hello there.
Which question are you answering today?
Well, I walked away from the radio, so I missed the last minute, but I'm assuming you're talking about the Supreme Court and the Voting Rights Act going on.
Exactly!
Right now.
Exactly!
Isn't now, that kind of freakish?
The Supreme Court is right across the street, directly across the street, dealing with the very thing that Rosa Parks is associated with, denial of rights. Now,
I mean, to me, as much as I've worked on this a long time, the level of schizophrenia to maintain a separation between the story of what you're saying and what's going on continues to amaze me.
What would you say is the significance of what was happening across the street and why the president never referenced it in his speech?
The significance of what's happening across the street is that it can have a direct effect on voting, which is the underpinning of how he's there. As you've outlined already. But then your second piece was? significant?
You were going to answer the question?
Yes, I was. Oh, sorry.
Okay, sorry. No, go ahead.
Could you repeat it? I think I already...
You already identified the first part absolutely correctly. It was what was going on across the street. The U.S. Mm-hmm. Supreme Court was deliberating or hearing testimony with respect to the Voting Rights Act.
Correct.
Now, why would that be symbolic given this particular event, you said, and correctly so? Had it not been for the Voting Rights Act, heaven knows whether the president himself would be there. But what is the significance of not mentioning it?
I would say the significance of not mentioning it is that he's not following the spirit of what she did. So the separation, the incongruity is too great. It's you're not speaking to what actually matters.
Okay.
Or he's not speaking to what matters. I don't know if that's quite answering.
No, that is exactly the answer. That is quite very much the answer.
Yeah.
Here's the president of the United States.
Yeah, who's a black man standing on the stage talking about it, not talking about being black himself, not talking
right.
about her being black.
And being comfortable about it. You know, it's a triumph in a way.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
just say, I am so proud to be, you know, part of Rosa Parks. I'm proud that she's part of me. Something like, you know, say something that references your reasonable proximity to the people who were at the base of your campaign. I mean,
exactly.
how could it hurt you?
Yeah,
and then
the other
piece of it is he refused, I think, to reference the Voting Rights Act. This is huge to me.
Right.
Because I think that there is this, I'm playing amateur psychologist at the moment. He already sees himself as having no further use for the vote.
Mm-hmm.
And so it doesn't matter what happens now. He's out of there. He's not going to run for president again. And hey, it's, you know, take care of business and see, let's see how it all unfolds. It would not have hurt him at all to even be on the record,
mm-hmm.
on record as affirming the Voting Rights Act and affirming the need for protecting the voting rights of all people.
Mm-hmm.
Would not have hurt him at all. Thank you, Paul.
Thanks.
Thank you so much. Excellent.
All right.
You're number
sure.
two. I love you too much for this. This is great. Thanks a lot. 874-4888.
888-874-4888.
Nana, you are on.
Okay, hi.
Which question are you answering?
In regards to the so-called president of the United States, of the United Snakes, and also Madam Rosa Parks, their difference is that she is for the people and by the people, and he is for the corporation and by the corporation. Thank you.
Okay, thank you for that. We're looking for analysis, and that would help us appreciate the total thought. 888-874-4888. There's something also, there are lots of other questions. I'm waiting to get you to answer something new. Let's see what I have here that's new. I've got my whole list here. Yes. Okay. All righty. I got it. So, Daryl from the Bronx. Thank you. You're on the air.
Hello, Miss Lee. Daryl McPherson from the Bronx.
It's your Treece, Daryl.
Yes, your Treece.
Thank you. Thank you so much. What are you answering?
It's interesting that he didn't mention anything about her belongings and why the research into her great life is being held up by $10 million at an auction house.
Oh, I didn't know that he could mention that there in a speech, you think?
Surely. It would be a
really?
Great fundraiser. I mean, he is good at fundraising.
Well, I think you would agree this wasn't a fundraising event.
What the event was supposed to be honoring Rosa Parks.
Correct.
Right?
Yes.
And what better way to be able to honor Rosa Parks than to be able to get into her her belongings, make sure that they are properly, I almost used the S word.
Sequestered?
Properly sequestered in a university what university might be appropriate here? Could it be an HBCU?
It might be.
Oh, wait, I can't get those letters right because they don't use the words anymore. I mean, $10 million. I'm trying to figure out when I heard
You're trying to say historically black college. Is that it?
Is that what I'm trying to say?
Is that what you're trying to say?
Thank you.
Oh, okay.
However, I mean, I was just shocked when they were talking about the new book that's out, and the author said that the reason she wasn't able to get more in depth. And then they interviewed the auctioneer who has the belongings, and he said, well, we'll match somebody up. I mean, $10 million, we'll find somebody, and we'll get it into an institution. So I'm trying to figure out, A, why the community isn't stepping up, but more important than that, what better thing than to say, yes, I'm going to make sure that these belongings of Miss Parks get into a historically black institution so that they can be viewed by all. He could take that out of his pocket or take it out of Bill's pocket. Or Hillary's pocket.
I have a question for you on the basis of what we heard. Okay. Your point is well taken, though. This is very important because this happens a lot, and this is one of the reasons I tend not to go to museums, that have acquired a lot of things. You know, they boast, for example, in New York, a Museum of Modern Art or a Museum of American History, and you see artifacts belonging to another country, and you say, well, geez, why can't you just give these things to the people whose treasures you stole, give them back. So I have a problem with that. So I take your point. But, I want you to address a question that came up in this speech, and that is the version of history that we heard, and what about it? Did anything about it disturb you? Version of Rosa Parks and the role she played in the civil rights movement.
May I focus on the part where he was talking about the blisters on the feet, and then after all of this trudging, they were able to take up their proper place and dignity on the bus.
Right.
Okay, so now, how come he didn't mention the arrest when you tried to carpool?
Well, let's talk about what's significant about that very narrative that Rosa Parks essentially was a nice little old seamstress who was clutching her purse, waiting for the cops to come and arrest her, and it was all about the where one could sit on the bus.
As compared to what it is right now, which is where you can be in
world. As compared to what it really was.
Oh, surely. I mean, however, I was moving it to, has it changed all that much now since he's been president? I mean, you've got more poor people than ever before. You've got more homelessness. You've got more this, that, and the other. Even if he wasn't able to physically address or financially address those things, when is he ever going to talk about those things?
Okay. Well, thank you, sir. You did reasonably well. 1 to 10, I'll give you an 8. Would that do? He says, yeah, forget it. I don't want an 8. You're on the air at 888-874-4888. I'm asking specifically, what is it that you find unusual about the version of history offered here about Rosa Parks? What about that history that we heard, the narrative that we heard, what is symbolic about it? 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Now, don't forget, this is an event that was broadcast. The entire nation, I think, saw some version of it. And not only the event itself, but the speeches are meant to convey something at a particular, you know, at this particular event. The speeches are scripted, of course. The president was reading a scripted speech. But, of course, it had to have met his approval and his input. But there was something very interesting about the speech. Michael from New Jersey.
Oh, hi. I wanted to address specifically the Voting Rights Act. And, you know, there's a term in Yiddish called chutzpah. I don't know if you're familiar with this term. But it seems like to bring a case against the Voting Rights Act requires tremendous chutzpah, especially on an occasion of Rosa Parks and all this. And I think that they're using President Obama as a black man reaching the highest office in the land as a rationalization for saying these laws are no longer useful. They're no longer needed. And we can go back to our ways of, you know, fancy discrimination of various kinds. And, you know, I mean, it seems proven that there's tremendous, they're trying to go ahead with discrimination despite the laws, you know, and they're trying to get around it and squiggle around it, and now they want to, you know, just nullify the laws. And
well, you know,
really
the they are people who are testifying, but, you know, the Supreme Court, of course, will be deliberating. And it did seem, according to most of the reports on the U.S. Supreme Court hearing yesterday, seemed to indicate that there was a fear based on the force of the presentations that the court heard yesterday. There was a fear that the court might be leaning toward abolishing Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act, which is the section that deals with preclearance, in which states that are identified, or parts of states that are identified as having overwhelming issues with voter abuse, voter rights abuses, will have to get federal clearance in order to make any changes in the law. But I'm asking Michael about the integrity of the argument made yesterday, or the presentation made yesterday, about the version of history that we had of Mrs. Rosa Parks. What was that history? Did it strike you as being significant or symbolic?
Well, you know, I mean, it, on the surface, it was a good speech. You know, it kind of hit a lot of notes that people might want to hear in terms of the struggle of blacks. Although, like you say, he never mentioned black. Did he say the word? I don't think so, right?
No, he didn't say the word.
He never said the word. I think the speech was written, and it was hitting those chimes of communities, you know, serving your community, and you know, it's sort of like a broad view of what John Kennedy said: ask not what you can do for your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country. And right now, we need something for the country to do for us, you know.
All right. Well, thank you. Thank you, Michael, for calling in.
Thank you.
Here's what, because we're getting close to the end of the program, I just wanted to make this note. It's a very important note. And that is the trivialization of Rosa Parks, which is typical in many instances of the history that we get about many of our heroes and leaders. That this was a one-dimensional thing about where she should sit on a bus. That was never the deal. This was not about where she should sit on a bus. This was Rosa Parks was a woman who was extremely committed and very, very much devoted to civil rights, and in fact underwent training, as did many of the folks in that era. They went around, went under training on how to engage in passive resistance. This was not a little lady, you know, clutching her purse. And this was not accidental. This was prepared for. This was what she decided that she was going to do. Not about the bus, sitting on a bus, but about asserting and affirming rights and waking up the people of Birmingham to the idea that they should have no fear in engaging the apparatus of government. So she was not just a little, nice little old lady clutching a purse on the bus. That's not what it was at all. I want to thank you so much. You did really well on your pop quiz. Paul and Nana, Daryl, Michael, thank you so much. And we'll see each other tomorrow at the same time. Pass the word. Bye-bye.